Do you feel safety issues when you're on stage?
I did right after October 7th. Things were so charged.
Yeah.
During a Q&A in San Francisco after the show, someone raised her hand and she was like, what if someone kills you? And I was like, she's like, I'm worried someone's going to kill you. Are you worried about that? I was like, well, now I am. This guy sent me a DM or a comment or something. And he said, I'm going to come to San Francisco on October 28th and behead you in front of your Zionist buddies. And I was like, well, the shows end on the 27th. You know,
that's
like,
I'm not funny.
I'm not gonna stay for the beheading. But that guy was like a skateboarder in Tunisia. Like, he's not gonna get his freaking flyer miles together.
Right.
You know, to get to San Francisco.
Right. He would do it with a more well-known comedian. That is the voice of the great Alex Edelman. This is Alex's fourth appearance on this podcast. It's a very exciting day for Alex because his comedy special, Just For Us, just came out on Max. But first, I want to tell you about my tour, Please Stop the Ride. I'm having such a blast on it. We just added a new city in Connecticut. Westport, Connecticut, Westport Country Playhouse. It is on sale now. It's a beautiful little 450-seat theater there. On June 7th, the night before, I play the Beacon Theater in New York City for one night only. This week, I go to Tulsa, Oklahoma for the first time, and then to pretty much everywhere in Texas. I'm good. I go to Dallas and Houston, San Antonio, and Austin. Yeah, that's all of Texas. After I go to Texas, I'm bringing my show to the Chicago Theater. Three shows at the Chicago Theater, one of the greatest theaters in the world. It's incredible. I go to Los Angeles. I go to Troy, New York. We added a show. I go to Rochester. We added a fourth show in Toronto. I go to Florida. I'm doing a show in New York City at the Beacon. I'm going to Washington, D.C. I added a show in Atlanta and Charlotte and Richmond, Niagara Falls, the Bay Street Theater in Sag Harbor. And then in the fall, I just announced Red Bank, New Jersey, an encore in Seattle, an encore in Portland. By the way, if you came to the other shows in Seattle and Portland, same show, it's the same tour, but I just went back because we sold those shows out so fast that a lot of people said they weren't able to get tickets in time. I'm going to San Francisco. I'm going to Oakland for the first time. I've never done a show in Oakland. That's where my sister Patty lives. I'm going to be at the Fox. I'm going to be in Philadelphia at this gorgeous, gorgeous music hall. Then I'll be in Minneapolis, Madison, Milwaukee, Champaign, Illinois, Indianapolis, Ann Arbor, Detroit, Dayton, Pittsburgh. Wait for it. Louisville, Nashville, Knoxville, Asheville, Charleston, South Carolina. I have listened to everyone's suggestions for where I should go. I've kept it in mind. I also may add a city here and there. I totally hear you. I'm working on it. Stay tuned. Today on the podcast, we have Alex Edelman. I think this is a record for the show. This is his fourth appearance on the podcast. He has a special called Just For Us that has been a hit Edinburgh show, a hit off-Broadway, and then Broadway show. It has toured all over the country, all over the world. I am one of the executive producers of the show. He and I are good friends. We really rib each other a bit. It is all in love. It's a super fun episode. And also, we hit on really sensitive topics. It's an interesting conversation. It's a funny conversation. We work out new jokes. Enjoy my conversation with the great Alex Edelman. Just For Us, you're about to release it into the universe. Mm-hmm. Do you have fear about releasing it into the universe?
Oh, yeah.
I always have fear.
You know,
releasing specials.
It's a terrifying, first of all, the show has been beyond my wildest dreams in terms of reception from people and in terms of how beautiful the experience has been live. And it's been incoming. And obviously, I'm stressed about like, whether or not I can ever do another thing again and all the creative stresses that creative people have. And I've had that stress before. It's my third show. But this one I've been doing for a long time. And the community of people who have come to see it and the community of people who have helped or given feedback or said nice things or left their handprints on the show in some way, I'm like very afraid to like leave that behind as if all those people will suddenly like disappear.
Yeah.
Even the people that have come to see the show.
Yeah.
You know, the show is sort of like the aggregate of my joys and sufferings over the last, you know, 5-6 years. And
right.
So,
well, because your director, Adam, passed away like in the middle of the process.
Yeah, that was tough, to say the least. But yeah, but also the beautiful
It's
community.
Also a tough note about the show.
Yeah.
He didn't know any other way to tell you.
Oh my God.
You killed him. No, it's obviously I'm joking. It's very, it's deeply,
he's not. He's
deeply,
serious.
Deeply sad.
But that is also so like, I don't know, that's perfect. Yeah. No one would have laughed at that harder than him, by the way. He had the best laugh. My director, is it okay that we're going in this direction conversationally?
Of course.
My director's laugh was, Adam's laugh was the most perfect sound, and I have a video of it, and sometimes I will play it like when I'm like, maybe it's too much information, but sometimes when I'm alone on the road or something before a show, I will play the video I have of Adam laughing at something. And I don't even remember what we're eating dinner.
And then you masturbate. Yeah. Sorry.
I knew
maybe
you were
I'm revealing too much.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that. That's what I play after I masturbate.
My God.
Sort of
this has
get
gone
back to
completely
zero.
Off the rails in minute 5.
Oh my God!
But yeah, you play. That makes sense that you play his audio. I have that with some friends who have passed away, and sometimes the only thing playing audio from someone is the only way for you to feel the warmth of their life and their impact on you.
I watched him laugh. Like that. And at the Edinburgh Fringe 2013, there were 3 comedians who had agreed to split a bill every day at like 1 p.m.
Yeah.
One comedian was such a degenerate drunk that he was never awake. So there was always 2 comedians.
Did you say who it was? Or would it be like disrespectful?
I'm joking about how degenerate a drunk he is, but his name is Naz Osmanlu, and he's really, really funny. He's a brilliant comedian, brilliant sketch comedian, brilliant actor, and I think like 8th in line to the abolished Ottoman throne.
Oh, all right.
Like he is a really, really funny, unique character, and if you Google, he was part of a sketch group called Wit Tank, and Wit Tank, which Adam directed, would put on a show in the afternoon, late afternoon, and a mixed bill show during the day. And Naz was never recovered from drinking in time for the like noon or 1 p.m. show or whatever it was. And so I would fill in for him most days.
No way.
The thing was called Kieran, Mark, and Naz Do Stand Up. And I was Naz like every single day.
You didn't say you were Naz, right?
No. Okay. I'd come on stage and explain what happened. Then I'd do 10 minutes, 15 minutes, or 20 minutes, and I'd leave.
Wow.
That was the thing. It was so much fun. And one day we're all sitting around drinking, Adam, me, with Hank. And and Mark said, God, we had a really great show today. You know, Alex was there and Ivo Graham was there. And I think we're going to have the same lineup tomorrow. Because by then, it's the end of the festival. They hadn't even counted on Naz coming. Like,
wow.
And so Naz went, really? They went, yeah. And Naz just went, huh. And totally seriously went, Mike, come see that.
That's so funny.
And it was just so perfectly in character for him to genuinely be like, oh, I should go see that show that he's supposed to be doing.
Right.
And Adam just hit the fucking floor.
Yeah.
He laughed. So, and like, we ran into each other. Well, we saw each other at Adam's like funeral.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you remember? I was like, you guys won't remember this. And Kieran went, I might come see that. And I was like, yeah. And Mark was like, an all-time great Adam laugh.
Oh.
Like an incredible.
Can you impersonate Zev?
What?
Can you impersonate Zev?
I mean, no, but you want me to play the audio?
Yeah,
of
yeah,
the,
yeah.
With a specific.
Because I remember him laughing.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like it's a key, it's a crucial part of the story.
I wish it wasn't so easily accessible.
Yeah.
I have a folder of all of the, oh, here. Let's see if I.
Aww. And Adam, of course, worked with you and Liz Kingsman, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, a whole bunch of people.
He worked with the most brilliant, his most brilliant work was, I think, with this thing he did called Shit Theater, which was a double act with, and one of the people in the double act is his partner, Rebecca, his partner when he passed away. And he did, it was like avant-garde theater, but it was beautifully accessible and it was inventive and it was, and like, it's a shame, like the boundaries of stand-up. People are always like, is your show stand-up? Is your show theater? And like he understood that that was an imaginary conversation or that that was like a useless conversation. He was always trying to like push the boundaries of both.
How has been doing, you've been doing the show Just For Us, which is now, it's on Max.
I did grow up dreaming of having a special that was on a service that was named after my grandfather. So it was really...
It feels a lot. Yeah, it's exciting to have a streaming service that feels a little bit like a dishwasher.
Yeah, but my grandfather is. I'm glad they named it after Max instead of Yechezkel.
Oh, that's catchy.
Yeah, it's catchy.
How has Ben performing the show? I don't know if you talk about this at all, but I remember you were telling me in Chicago you had like a person who was protesting the show or heckling the show, or
someone stood up and was like, why are you telling all of these jokes about Judaism instead of like, you know, talking about what Jews are doing to other people? And I was like, well, that's the next show.
Yeah.
Like that's a very contentious thing. It was interesting because what I wanted and what the crowd wanted was so different. Because the crowd was so dead set.
It's happened in Chicago, yeah.
It's happened in Chicago.
Steppenwolf? Yeah.
Steppenwolf, by the way, they handled it immediately. Like, there was a security guard in there right away in 10 seconds. And this woman stood up. And I lost my patience, actually. I said, you know, the show's about me going to a meeting of anti-Semites, not having them come here. Which got a huge reaction from the crowd. And then when it got the reaction from the crowd, I went, you know, I actually don't think that that's the tone of this interaction. So I said to her, I was like, you're referring to the situation in Israel and Palestine. She said, yes. And I said, okay, well, I was like, the show is not about that. I was like, but the show is like lightly conversant with that as a theme. So it was like the theme of empathy and hard questions and hard choices and how we relate to people that we disagree with and, you know, even might think are monsters. I was like, I'd like for you to stay and watch the rest of the show. And the crowd was like not in agreement with that.
Mm.
And the security guard went, she's leaving. And I was like, okay, I mean, I'm not going to overrule Calvin. Like he's the guy. So she left, but then the crowd clapped. And I wasn't crazy about, and so I kept doing the show. And about a minute later, I stopped the show again. I was like, just so you know, I don't know about, people ask me sometimes for like what the message of the show is. And I was like, I don't know what the message of the show is because you don't develop it with that in mind. I think one of the things of the that's engendered in the show is a suspicion of easy comforts.
Mm.
And I was like, and I'd like you guys to keep that in mind.
Right, because just to put it in context, the logline of the show is that you show up at a meeting of people who are racist, anti-Semitic, kind of white nationalists, mm-hmm. meeting in Queens.
Yeah.
And so you're in a lot of themes you explore have to do with that.
Yeah. And also, you know, someone pointed out to me recently, I went to go see, this doesn't have to be a whole strain of conversation because I could talk about it for hours and haven't thought about it enough, but I went to go see Louis Farrakhan speak in Detroit, and it was at the Nation of Islam conference, and it was a very different crowd of anti-Semites. I was the only, I think maybe there were three or four other white people in a crowd of, you know, probably 5,000 or 7,000 people, like a huge amount of people. And it was different. Like, and it reminded me a thing that I say in the show. I could only walk into that room as a white person, right? I can only walk into a room of white nationalists
mm-hmm.
if I have something that they would say is the most essential quality in common with them, right? Like, I say that nothing says white privilege more than a Jew walking into a meeting of white nationalists being like, this will probably be fine.
Yeah, yeah. I love that line.
It's my favorite line in the show, probably, because it's an important... So yeah, I just think that everything is less binary than we think it is. And I think that tension's like a really interesting thing to address tangentially and play around with, so.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mike, was that a totally tangential answer? Is that like...
No, it's interesting. It's just giving me sort of like, I'm sort of ruminating on it. And do you think that the next show will be in some way related to the reaction to the show and the themes that are we're all living, you know, the stories we're living through right now?
Taffy Akiner, who wrote Fleischman's in Trouble.
Oh, I know. I love it.
One of the great, I guess, one of the great writers, period. Her magazine pieces are as funny as anyone's stand-up routines. But Taffy said to me, your next show will depend on how this experience ends. And so, I mean, she said that to me, I think, a few days before or after Adam passed away or something like that. But it was, it was just going to be about Israel and Palestine. I was going to do the next show about Israel and Palestine. And now it feels like such a poisonous concept, but it's so on my mind. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure what it will be.
Do you feel safety issues when you're on stage?
I did right after October 7th. Things were so charged.
Yeah.
During a Q&A in San Francisco after the show, someone raised her hand and she was like, what if someone kills you? And I was like, excuse me? And I was like, she's like, I'm worried someone's going to kill you. Are you worried about that? I was like, well, now I am. This guy sent me a DM or a comment or something, but it was on Instagram. And he said, what? I'm going to come to San Francisco on October 28th and behead you in front of your Zionist buddies. And I was like, well, the shows end on the 27th. You know, like,
so funny.
I'm not going to stay for the beheading. And also, I don't know that I agree with everybody in the crowd on everything politically, so maybe we can have a... But that guy's not going to... That guy was like a skateboarder in Tunisia. Like, he's not going to get his freaking flyer miles together.
Right.
You know, to get to San Francisco.
Right. He would do it with a more well-known comedian.
Bert Kreischer? He'd have a tougher time adding Bert Kreischer than he would me. I'm being honest with you. Bert's like a strong guy. And he's like surprisingly agile and he's like, you know, he's really light on his feet.
Also, beheading is so involved.
Oh, you know it's so specific. It really requires a holding still. But I saw that and I thought, I'm turning off comments now. That's the one that did it.
That's what did it.
Sorry, this is not to bring. We've talked about the death of my director. We've lightly touched on, you know, really intense geopolitical stuff, but
it seems good.
Although the funny thing is, I trust your listenership in the sense that, like,
yeah, they're pretty good.
Yeah, they're not gonna.
I think the more cautionary part of my listenership is not the listeners; it's the watchers on YouTube.
Oh yeah, sure.
Because that can get kind of served to anybody.
Yeah, they're like
these motherfuckers. Yeah, you know, all right. How'd you end up here?
You liked this beheading video. Here's another video.
Exactly. The algorithm is not helping us. Like,
beheading. Bam.
It doesn't matter if you're for it or against it.
Your general interest is beheading.
On a positive front, did you have a personal experience with an audience member after performing Just for Us that was meaningful to you?
Every single day. I'm not kidding. Genuinely every single day. Genuinely every single day.
You're gesticulating so much about this.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. There is a picture.
Every single day.
Every single day.
Every single day.
Every single day. Like, I'm a Muppet right now.
Every single day. Every single day.
Every single day.
Every single day. What are you trying to prove? You're on Broadway? Every single day.
If you check any one of these, we've done four now. Yes, they're amazing.
This is our fourth.
Every single time I come on the podcast, Mike roasts me to my face in a way that makes me laugh so hard. And
I'm roasting out of love.
I know. It's my love language.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll have it. Speaking of the comments, sometimes I'll have it in the comments like Pete Holmes is being mean to you. I'm like,
I love that episode.
He's not being mean to me. He loves me.
No. It is the number one difference in character between American comedians and everybody else. Genuinely, It is understood that it is a love language. And there's a difference between like mean roasting and like roasting with love. Like you, also, if I ever had a problem, Mike is one of the people that I would call and seek advice from. So if Mike is making fun of me for a problem, he knows that it's not like the thing in my life that's, you know, not going to be like, God, Mike making fun of my goofy arms and the fact that sometimes I resemble one of those car dealership balloons. That's just like, you know, I'm okay with it. I'm very okay with it.
What's the meanest burn you've ever received that actually you did take hard?
Oh my God, there are so many. Joel Dommett, who's another comedian in England, said, I look like an ugly version of all of the Beatles. Which really made me laugh. Good. It's really funny.
That's good. Did it hurt or did it feel okay?
It felt kind of okay.
Well, it's funny, like you know, a modern buzzword is being seen. I don't feel seen, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
Being roasted is being seen.
Oh, that's so interesting. And someone said there's nothing more romantic than being understood.
Yeah.
And so there is something really beautiful about someone perceiving an essence in you, even if that's an essence that you're afraid of. There is a relief at being seen.
I think so. But when my daughter and my wife, Jenny, make fun of me or do impersonation of me walking or being like whatever, I feel so loved.
Yeah. There's something someone said about a producer in Los Angeles said, I think Cameron Crowe said it about somebody. He said, that's a really decent person. They will knife you in the front.
They will knife you in the front.
It's a really good line and it's really true. Like there's something about someone saying to you a mean thing that releases you from the sort of like, oh God, as soon as I leave the room. There are a couple of people, I'll tell you afterwards, who are like, when I'm like, I don't want to leave the room around you. I'm like terrified of what you're going to say as soon as I'm out of here.
Yeah, forget about it.
It is like a really terrifying. It's really terrifying.
What do you think they'll say when you go?
Oh, that guy. I have never, I think people correctly identify that I've had a lot of like insecurity. Like I grew up so insecure, so desperately wanting to like belong. And so you try different approaches when you're younger, right? You try to demonstrate knowledge. You try to demonstrate that you belong.
Did you say knowledge?
Knowledge. Thanks,
it sounded
Mike.
Like knowledge.
Yeah.
Great. I just didn't know if that was a pronunciation thing.
No, but this is like, remember room and museum?
Yeah.
Museum.
Museum and room. That's how you say it. Then the Boston accent is rum and museum.
Museum. It's the Museum of Fine Arts.
Museum.
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 I now say it.
Museum. The three syllables.
I started trying after you roasted me the last time. I started trying to say museum.
And even the way you say it right is wrong.
But that's the thing. I said museum, and my friend Ben was like, why are you saying that word weird? I was like, no, that's correct. Can I tell you a fun name-droppy story about Ben?
Well, first of all, I'll walk you back before you tell the story. What did you feel insecure about?
Not belonging. I still feel a sense of not belonging. I still am terrified that, like, I lived in New York City, and I was one of the most liberal people I knew. And then I moved to Los Angeles, and they're like, you're Mitt Romney. And I was like, what? Like, oh. I felt very out of step, and my politics changed.
Why Mitt Romney?
I'm just like, you know, I'm just picking a person who's like a conservative light, or seems like lightly conservative now. Oh. But everyone was like, you know, at a big kerfuffle, like, over, like, the Olympics. Like, because I love the Olympics because it's one of the only things we do together as a planet besides kill each other. I think it's like a really, and my brother's an Olympian. And I went to the Olympics in 2018 and saw these like North Koreans who were like, they had North Koreans who had been sent to Pyeongchang from Pyongyang, and watching them see the West as it is, like genuinely watching North Koreans experience, I was like, oh my God, this is a really special, interesting event. And also, the Olympics is sometimes used to excuse things that are non-excusable, right? Like they'll clear out certain neighborhoods, or all of a sudden all the homeless people in a neighborhood will disappear right before the Olympics. So it's like a very contentious thing. And there's a burgeoning movement in Los Angeles to try to like divest them of the Olympics in 2028.
Oh.
And like, it's very, and so I mentioned that I like the Olympics, and everybody looked at me like it was a whole a whole thing. And I was like, I genuinely sometimes feel too XYZ for a space. And
so you take on controversial topics like the Olympics.
I mean, but that's what I thought, right? Like, I was like, well, like the person who brought me was like, everyone's going to know you like the Olympics now. And I was like, 3 billion people watch the Olympics. I might not be the only fan. There are other people who watch the Olympics. But like when you occupy like different little subcultures, different little spaces, and spaces you badly want to belong to, sometimes the most insecure version of you comes out. And like that version tries to demonstrate knowledge or tries to demonstrate. You've never experienced this?
The Olympics thing?
No, you know what I mean. You know what I mean, Mike.
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean. I mean, I feel like I'm always the person who is in a conversation with, if me and Jenny are in conversation with like a couple that we are new to know or whatever, where Jen will have this look on her face like, what the fuck's Mike going to say now? Because I am, I generally like discourse.
I have this joke that I'm working on about how like what I'm really looking for in a partner is someone who's comfortable saying, sorry about him for the rest of our lives. Just to be like, sorry, you know, he's doing his best.
Well, it's funny, like I was talking to Chris DiStefano about this the other day on this podcast. It's like Chris DiStefano went from being sort of not that funny or as a comic to being like really, really funny, like found it. Mm-hmm. I feel like you had that. Because I remember when you were a kid, you know, you came to the Cellar when you were like at NYU. It's like, you weren't a good comic.
No,
but then you
not.
Found it. It's like, well, did you have a found it moment?
2014, I had a moment where, end of 2013, beginning of 2014, I started to like put it all together. And by the way, not to be too like self-helpy, it was when I figured out for myself that I could like just do it.
Yeah.
I figured out for myself that I didn't need to like be quite so try hard is when it all just started to coalesce. And I had my own show. I had my own solo show, I had my own thing. And so like, I think having your own thing, like you build these things in little bits and iterations. You find little stuff and you pile it on top of each other.
Yeah.
You've got something mean to say. You've got a little half smile. What's the
it's
mean
not
thing?
Mean.
You've got a little zest. You have a little electric buzzer in your hand and you're reaching out for a shake. What is it?
I'm thinking of like, I didn't have this planned, but I was thinking about when you like won an award at Edinburgh like years ago, probably 2014.
2014.
Right? And then you ran into your college professor, the famed novelist Sadie Smith. And she was like, what are you up to? And you were like, I was in Edinburgh.
And she said, who had a good year this year? And my brother who was with me, Austin, went, he did. And she went, who won the Perrier? And Austin went, he did. And she went, seriously, who won the Perrier?
Oh my God. So good.
But it was one of those things where I was like, yeah, you need to figure out where you need to. Figure out who you, although by the way, Zadie got me again this year because Zadie came to see my show
in London
and she went, I never knew you could write. And I was like, Zadie, you were my professor for an entire semester.
She is so, talk about someone who will burn you and the burn is love. She's a fierce talker.
She once was grading, how about this for an insult you remember?
And by the way, I'm saying this, hoping she hears this and comes on the podcast.
I mean, I've asked her
before.
She's a great podcast guest. When it's off times that she does it, but she only does podcasts she really likes for people she really likes. Okay, but I'm joking. It's for Mabel and Gary.
Shut it off!
It's for Mabel and Gary.
Shut off the camera!
I can't do one zets. But Zadie won one of my papers in 2011. Circled a section and just wrote woof next to it.
Oh my God. Standing ovation. Standing ovation. That is, that's as good of a burn as a professor could have.
I mean, I have a paper, I still have it somewhere in like a shoebox in my childhood home. She wrote, Alex, this paper was so good, I was positive you stole it from the internet.
That's great.
Which is like mean and also nice and also like I worked so hard on the papers at the end of the semester because at the beginning I had been burned by a generation-defining voice.
Wait, I have to ask you about Benj. Tell me the Benj story.
We went to an event at the Met. And it was like the, and Bill Gates was somewhere at this event.
Who?
He's like Elon Musk, but he uses powers for good.
Understand.
And he's like the richest guy in the world. He's like, second richest guy now. But we really should start a GoFundMe. But I said to Benj, I think that's Bill Gates. And he went, I think so too. And I went, I'm going to go ask him for change for the fountain.
Oh God.
And Benj went, don't. And I was like, no, I'm going to do it. It'll be like, really? Bill Gates will love it. I'll love it. So I go up to Bill Gates. I went, excuse me, Mr. Gates. And he recoiled physically. Oh, and Benj was watching.
This pains me so much.
And I went, I'm sorry to bother you. Really, I tried to open with a compliment. I was like, really appreciate everything you've done. And then I went, do you have any change for the fountain? And he went, what? And I said, there's a fountain over there. People sometimes throw in change. Do you have any change for the fountain? And Benj comes running over. And I see Benj running over. And he stops like 10 feet away to watch his interaction happening. And Bill Gates went, I don't have any change for the fountain. And I went, you don't have any change for the fountain. Just to make Benj laugh. Benj is not like, Benj comes over and he's like, sorry about this. And he's like, he was going to ask you for change for the fountain. And Bill Gates went, he already did. And he went, did you give him change for the fountain? And Bill Gates went, no. And Benj went, you don't have any change for the fountain.
That's funny.
And I said to Benj, well, I guess you don't get to be Bill Gates by giving everybody change for the fountain. And Bill Gates went, nice to see you. And
oh then he God, walked nice away. To see
nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
I want to be like, if we'd met before, you'd remember, you know? Like,
wow. So when you ask Bill Gates, do you have change for the fountain? Are you embarrassed? You should be.
No.
Okay.
He's fine.
Something wrong with you?
Yeah. Haven't we established this many times in previous podcasts? Yeah, there's something going on here.
Yeah.
Like scoliosis, ADHD, lack of social graces, and crippling anxiety paired with an inability to filter myself.
I have a few more here. This is a slow round question. What are people's favorite and least favorite thing about you?
Oh, man. I would say that people's favorite thing and least favorite thing about me is ultimately, I am the person that I am. And so some people love me for my curiosity and love me for my weird thing you say to Bill Gates. And some like, if you listen to that Bill Gates story and you're like, that's really funny and really interesting and I'd like to have more of that in my life every so often, then maybe I'm the person for you. And my friend,
you're like a disruptor without the company.
I'm like Uber if there was no taxis.
Yeah.
But it's a really interesting, my friend got me a sweatshirt that says I'm not for everyone.
Yeah.
I don't wear it around.
Are you identifying it as the thing that people like least about you is that you will kind of say the inappropriate thing?
I'm not trying. It's not. Is it really inappropriate to say to Bill Gates,
I'm asking.
You
didn't answer. I said, what's people's favorite and least favorite thing about you?
I said myself.
But describe what that is.
I'm genuine. Like, I'm curious. I'm a little pretentious. I'm a little annoying. I don't know. But I'm also like, I genuinely try to hear other people because I'm genuinely curious. Like, how about that? I'm genuinely curious. But that sometimes not everybody feels like being interrogated and not everybody feels like being, that's the good answer to the question. That's probably the true answer is curiosity.
You just complimented your answer at the end of the question.
Yeah, it's a good answer. I'm very smart and very curious and I like to travel and I like long walks on the beach. I might be the first guy to do that. Have you read David Foster Wallace? Sick. Okay.
Your sentences just keep going.
Yeah, like car crashes.
What is a time where you didn't apologize, but you wish you did?
Oh, man. Gosh, I'm really sorry about all the, like, grief chat.
Oh, it's so okay. I like grief chat.
This
again.
Yeah. Shit. I have a tendency when I'm going through pain to hold people at arm's length.
Yeah.
But I don't always explain why.
Yeah.
And so sometimes that creates situations where I'm like, please stay, like, please don't get too close to me because people are dying left and right. So please stop doing that. But I wish that wasn't like my pain response was that sort of like fear of being hit again. This is so earnest, Mike. I'm like really.
I like earnest.
Okay, but it's really.
It's making me think because I wouldn't have thought of it unless you said it. But I think if I analyze why I'm keeping people at arm's length when I'm going through something, grief or whatever it is, and I never have, it's that the question they're asking or the statement they're making often would require a novel of an answer.
Yeah.
For you to even explain what it is you're experiencing.
Of course.
And so then as a result, you're terse. And then you're like, well, I shouldn't have been terse.
I think that there's a lot of... I've become a better communicator. And if you're listening to the podcast at home and you're like, really? You become a better communicator? You're not like crushing it right now. What were you just using sounds and gestures 5 years ago? But like, yeah, I've become a better communicator, but I have found it so hard to, communication, like you said, all my favorite friends are so articulate in the way they express how they're feeling. And like, I think it's a thing that I really want for myself, being able to, like, that's one of the reasons I love doing comedy. Cause like you're articulating. And the reason I work better in long form comedy than short form comedy, because I think a personality like this requires an hour of explanation.
Yeah. So let's do jokes.
Please. Am I allowed to pull out my laptop? Is that allowed?
Oh yeah, please. I've been writing a lot of jokes lately about drugs. It's just a thing that, you know, I take medication for sleepwalking. And it's just like, it's a thing that I've just been meditating on. I was thinking about how we had a family friend growing up who had a bad trip. This was when I was a kid. And he thought he was Jesus Christ.
Was he?
Right, exactly. But that's my joke. I lived in such a Catholic town that for a week, everyone was like, does anybody know? You know what I mean? Has anybody heard anything?
That's so funny.
You know what I mean? Like, and this is the, I wrote, either Jesus Christ decided to return to Shrewsbury, Massachusetts, or some kid had a bad experience with LSD. A notable thing about the story is that he was like from this really religious family, church 5 days a week, you know, pilgrimages to Yugoslavia. So in a way, this was the ultimate case of mom, look at me. Except it was, mom, look at me, I'm Jesus Christ.
Although I think it's the ultimate case of mom, look at me is when you're an atheist and you think you're Jesus Christ. Because then you're asking for two big leaps.
Yeah, I like that.
You're asking for two huge jumps. Like, because like a medium step would be like, if you're from an atheist family and you're like, I've taken all this LSD and I think I'm Christopher Hitchens. You'd be like, what? Think I'm Jesus Christ. They're like, well, two problems there. First of all, He's just a carpenter who lived 3,000 years ago. Like, no, he's the son of God. Okay, well, it brings us to the second thing.
Yeah.
Just on drugs, I have a thing about how I lost my voice when I was in the middle of a run and they put me on steroids. Mm. And I'd never taken steroids before.
Yeah.
But I took steroids at like 4:02 p.m. on a Thursday, and at 4:05, I was like, Barry Bonds should not be in the Hall of Fame.
Good joke.
I was like, someone came up to me. I was answering questions before I was asked. So, someone came up to me. They're like, Alex. I'm like, Tuesday. They're like, what? And I was like, did that do it? They're like, yep. And I'm like, good. Like, it's just,
wow.
I took a shower and I could see every drop. I was like dodging. I was like so dodging droplets in the shower.
That's a great joke.
You think so?
I love the turn. I love the Barry Bonds turn.
Barry Bonds should not be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, now you can list off people.
But by the way, I went out on these steroids on stage and I had the best show of my life. And then I came off stage and I was like, I'm excited for tomorrow. And I went on stage, still on steroids the next night, and had the worst night of my life. And I was like, this is really interesting. Like,
right.
You really understand.
John Belushi.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to pick a different, I was going to say Jim Morrison. But yeah, you really understand that you're really playing with this sort of, in the same vein, by the way, can I pitch one more thing?
Which is
Dolly Parton wrote Jolene and I Will Always Love You in the same writing session. And for the rest of her life, do you think she was like, all right, so that day I woke up and I had eggs and I had asparagus and I took an 11-minute shower. And like for the rest of her life, trying to like get that sort of like.
That's a great point. I don't like the, I mean, the joke doesn't.
Yeah,
it isn't there, but like the premise is great.
The premise that
and the observation's great, I think, in my opinion.
That's the thing. I can't find the
observation's
joke.
So funny.
Because like if a hockey player scores a goal the next night, they're like, what was undershirt was I wearing?
Right.
But or how about any time she talks about that one day, things go incredible? They're like, what'd you do, Dolly? She's like, oh no, I worked 9 to 5. Oh my God.
That's funny.
That's not bad. But I don't know, it's hard to.
It's not that hard. You work 9 to 5. Wait a minute.
Yeah. God, there's nothing better than fucking writing the joke.
Yeah, jokes are fun. Mm. Here's something that's like really half there, but I think Americans are bad roommates. They're like, I have a gun. You're like, what?
See my gun?
Are you gonna lock it up? No, this is America. It's about freedom. Ever heard of it? Right, but we also sort of share the same space. Socialist. Well, there are socialist elements, you know.
Like firefighters are socialism.
Well, also like, no, I mean, the roommate things, like we share toilet paper, we split the utilities. Shut up! Actually, I think you might want to shut up because not that it matters, but I do pay more rent.
That's great.
That's fun, right?
That's really good.
I don't know what the hell it has to do with any of the material
really
I'm doing.
It's a really good joke.
I think there's something to it.
That is the thing that when you write a joke and you're like, this is great for John Fugelsang. This is great for, I'm just picking a random comedian who does
political stuff.
Yeah. I'm going to all these new different Jewish spaces. And sometimes, like, because I was raised in such a like religious environment. And so now I go to places that are like different affiliations. So you come to like, you go to places and they're like, we're not a traditional synagogue. We're God optional. We're faith optional. We're very progressive. You're like, okay. You're like, how progressive are you? They're like, we're anti-Semitic.
That's very funny.
We're, nothing here is kosher. And, who's tonight's fundraiser for? It's for the Iranian Revolutionary Guard.
Oh my God. That's very funny.
I have a thing that I've been trying to tackle, but it's a weird position because you tangentially also address the thing.
Yeah.
Like, remember you had this bit, I don't know if it's still in circulation, but about how banks... Like a bank went bankrupt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you're like, aren't you supposed to have our money? Like, we don't have your money.
Yeah, yeah. It's my sky is falling versus everything is okay in a relationship bit. Yeah.
That was my bank.
Oh, Silicon Valley Bank.
Silicon Valley Bank was my bank. And so
by the way, to give context to this, Silicon Valley Bank, like, I want to say-
A year ago, March.
A year ago was just like, we don't have the money.
I was watching the news- And this is like part of the bit. I was watching the news and they're like, Silicon Valley Bank has gone bankrupt. And I had a thought. I was like, wow, that's the same name as my bank.
Great like, joke.
But that's so interesting.
Standing ovation.
Really?
I love that joke. That's the same name as my bank. That's the same name as my bank.
Because in my mind, the news always happens. Every single time I've watched the news, it has happened to other people.
Yes.
Because I've never been like, oh my gosh. I won an NBA championship. Like, it's never happened to me. It always happens to the Toronto Raptors, right? It's never happened to me. So they were like, everyone at Silicon Valley Bank can't get their money out. I was like, that's crazy because obviously I'll be able to. And I called the bank and I sort of got, I called the number for the little bank in Boston that was bought by Silicon Valley Bank that was my bank. And the guy picked up the phone and went, what? And I went, okay, today might be, maybe I'm included in the all of the customers of Silicon Valley Bank.
Oh my God.
And I went, hi, this is Alex. And he went, are you a user? And I was like, Yeah. I mean, I'm a customer. It was a truly panic-inducing situation. But also, every one of my friends, I was going online and watching people celebrating this thing happening to like all these people in Silicon Valley. And right. I was like, no. I, who have never been in Silicon Valley, am the affected party here.
Yeah.
Like a Boston comedian. Everyone's like, yeah, let him fail. And I was like, no, we've got
to. There's other parties.
We've got to help Google, you know? We've got to help. Because it wasn't just those billionaires. It was also, you know, thousandaires like me.
Right.
But it was a really crazy.
Have you done that on stage?
No. I've not said a single.
Oh, that'll kill. And also, like, I would just free associate on how you felt. Not like in a superficial sense, but like, what does it feel like to be like, oh, maybe everything I've ever worked for in my entire life is gone.
Do you know what it made me do? Like? I didn't work for that day. People would call me with more questions. I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm questioning the concept of money right now, so yeah, I can't do anything.
That's good.
I was like, genuinely, people were like, we're on deadline for this and you're traveling here for stand-up. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do that anymore. I might want to eat berries in the woods because it all doesn't matter.
Final thing we do is working it out for a cause. What's an organization you like to contribute to?
There's an organization called Sefaria, Sefaria. And when I was growing up, if you wanted access to Jewish text, you had to know Hebrew and Aramaic and have like these really hard to find rare books.
Mm.
And it cost tens of thousands of dollars to get these books. These guys took all of those books, negotiated the copyrights, and put them online for free.
Wow.
And it's
looking at this. The largest free library of Jewish texts available to read in Hebrew and English, including Torah, Tanakh, Talmud, Mishnah. I'm pronouncing these
correctly,
right?
Uses it. Everybody from Hasidic Jews to Orthodox Jews to Kanye West fans doing opposition research. Everybody is on this website.
We're going to encourage listeners to contribute as well. Alex Handelman, part 4. Bring it on. HBO nice. Special.
Thank you.
Thank you. I can't wait for people to see this special.
Working it out, because it's not done. We're working it out, because there's no one.
That's going to do it for another episode of Working It Out. Alex Edelman is one of a kind. You can see his show Just For Us on Max right now. That's right. It's Max. It was HBO for a while. Then what happened? Who knows? Who cares? You can watch it on Max. You can follow Alex Edelman on Instagram or on TikTok at Alex Edelman. You can watch the full video of this interview on our YouTube channel at Mike Birbiglia. Check that out. Subscribe because we're posting more and more videos. Go to birbigs.com to sign up for the mailing list to be alerted to any upcoming shows, and there's a lot coming. Our producers of Working It Out are myself, along with Peter Salamone, Joseph Birbiglia, and Mabel Lewis, associate producer Gary Simons, sound mixed by Ben Cruz, supervising engineer Kate Balinski. Special thanks to Jack Antonoff and Bleachers for their music. Special thanks to my wife, the poet, J. Hope Stein. Special thanks, as always, to my daughter, Una, who built the original Radio Fort made of pillows. Thanks most of all to you who are listening. If you're enjoying it, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Just write what your favorite episode is, and then people will know when they see that there's 130 episodes, which one might be a fun place to start on. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. Let's say you're visiting Boston. You're on your way to the museum. The museum. Someone bumps into you. You know, Boston could get a little rough. Instead of fighting, just try recommending this podcast. And if they don't quite understand you, try recommending this podcast. It's called Working It Out. It's hosted by Mike Birbiglia. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.